You're listening to the Ayn Rand Institute Live podcast series. Taking your happiness seriously with Tara Smith and Dave Rubin.
Tara, how are you?
I'm fine.
It is nice to talk to you. We are going to talk about happiness, and you're a pretty happy, smiley lady from the bit that I've gotten to know you.
Yeah. No, I have a nice life. I think I'm basically a happy person. But that's a matter of, you know, not just, I think, disposition, but or good fortune, though I've had a lot of good fortune. You know, I think happiness is a function of how you lead your life. So you've started me by sort of feels self-congratulatory.
Yeah, well, it's a funny, when I've done a few of these, it's a funny thing to say to somebody, you seem happy, or you are happy, or are you happy?
Yeah.
It's an odd way to start a conversation, which is why I intentionally do it.
I am happy, and I hope you're happy, and I hope most people are happy.
Yeah,
but I think it takes some, you know, it takes some work and it takes some thought.
Yeah.
When
did you realize that happiness was an important part of being human,
that
or at
is
least
a
of
really,
your human experience?
Gosh, that's a really interesting question. In some ways, and I've never quite thought about it before, so I'm just giving you a very spontaneous. You know, in some ways, I think as even a very little kid, early on, implicitly, I was picking up on the importance of happiness from certain of the models. But then, philosophically, really thinking about it more was around the time that I discovered objectivism and started thinking of this self-interest stuff. What the hell is that about? I had been raised a good Catholic girl, you know, and I was a good Catholic girl. I made a mean Lent and all that.
So what was that like, though, when you have that wake-up and these ideas are so counter to what you've grown up with?
It was, you know, the wake up was, you know, on the one hand, you read some of Rand's fiction and it's like, whoa, if you're paying attention, you get this, is, you know, so it's a wake up in that sense. But I had to think it through because I was very seriously a Catholic and it was not easy and it was not quick. But I mean, I would say maybe within several months. What was it like? I mean, it was hard in some ways. Because I was very close to my father, who was very religious, and I knew the idea of not believing in God would not... It's not so much that it wouldn't go over well in the sense of he would disown me, and he didn't disown me or anything like that, but I knew it would break his heart. I didn't want to, you know, like...
Yeah.
I don't want to go there now. It's like, I mean, that was really hard. But what I was realizing was, oh, these ideas, being selfish, going after your happiness, they make a lot of sense. I mean, I think they are the way to live. Now, again, I'm still pretty young at this stage, you know, at the end of high school. But then I went on to college and ended up double majoring in philosophy and then grad school in philosophy. So I had a lot more time to think about this in much more depth and, you know, all of the texture and complexity of it and alternative moral theories and other theories, but...
Yeah, so let's just get this to the sort of base level here. So what is happiness?
I mean, you know, we often talk about people being happy in a relatively superficial way, which I think there's nothing wrong with that, but oh, you're happy because the Lakers won, you know, or you're happy because the sun is out after a week of rain in California or whatever, and that's perfectly fine. But when we're talking about happiness, and as philosophers talk about it, and as I think we need to think about it, it's really this, it has to do with how your life is going, the condition of your life, the state of your life, right? And we all know that amidst all the ups and downs of a given day, you know, that annoying piece of mail or that bill or that, you know, I mean, there are frustrations. There are, oh, good news on this, you know, of modest and different size. You still have a sense of, but how's it going overall or big picture, right? Oh, I had a really, you know, these three damn irritating things happened today, but I know my life is in good shape, you know. So it has more to do with that global perspective on how your life is going. But I think of it as really encompassing both. In fact, how is your life going? You know, is it going well? Are you achieving your values? Are you making progress on the things that you most care about? If you have kids, or how are the kids doing? You know, presuming you care about the kids. How are the kids progressing in first grade now? And so, right, how is the career progressing? How is that health problem you've been having? I mean, so it's how are things actually going for you? But
so
it's not
it,
just...
So you view it as a macro way of looking at the world, sort of, in that it's not just the day-to-day pleasures.
Oh, it's definitely not just the day-to-day.
It's a baseline sort of...
Well, it's you know, what's the arc? You know, a life is it's something you do and you get up every morning and you live it, right? So how is that thing, that process of living, how is that going? As well as how is it feeling? So it's, you know, on the one hand, I want to caution against it's just the mood you're in. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm in a, you know, some days I'm in a more upbeat mood or something. That doesn't mean, I mean, the kind of happiness we're talking about is more over time, stable, but it's how you feel as well as how it's actually going. But I don't want to get in both those aspects, the kind of psychological awareness of things are going well mm-hmm. when they actually are going well.
So how can we attain happiness then when we live in a time where information is flying so fast?
Yeah. No, and I mean, everybody's looking for happiness. I mean, you know, the last 20 or 30 years, we have happiness gurus and, you know, and it's been like 20 or 30 years ago. I think it was Bhutan was the first country to have a comparable to the GNP. They measure the general happiness mm-hmm. index. And now you'll see these studies come out of, well, Denmark is the most happy place. We have happiness gurus, we have consultants, we have happiness studies in psychology and economics and so on. So everybody's looking for it. And the typical places we're told to get it are from God, from the right meds. You know, get the right dosages and I'm happy, right?
Right. Or, you won't have that cloud following you.
Now it's not medication, it's meditation, right? Mm-hmm. That's what you should do to be happy. Or tech, no tech, go no tech and that's, you know, and I think ideas, you know, having the right ideas that you're living by is really at the base of what's necessary for people to be happy. So a lot of the search for happiness or the seeming unhappiness that people experience, I think comes from trying to live by philosophical premises that don't work and can't work and get in our way, and then we wonder why we're not happy and we're so desperate for the self-help books.
So in a weird way, could you argue that happiness is almost secondary to living a life that gives you fulfillment first, because happiness is sort of the offshoot of or is that a little
I don't see it
egg?
Quite that way, mm-hmm. but I will say this, so it might amount to the same thing. I mean, I'm thinking of happiness as roughly interchangeable with a few other terms, like flourishing mm-hmm. or living a fulfilling life, well-being. You know, we talk about what is well-being for a person, not just physical. I mean, we can all go to the doctor, you know, and get the medical report, health-wise, right? But your life is not just the health of your body, right? So it's not just a matter of physical well-being, but are you happy? Are you satisfied? Are you frustrated? Are you depressed? Are you anxious? You know, I mean, there are all sorts of pathologies that we have psychologically that get in the way of a person's just overall well-being. Mm-hmm. So it's not that I would separate it from fulfillment, but living a fulfilling life, living a life where you really are achieving, realizing your values, realizing your capacities, and so on.
Can some people live very different lives and still be happy? So someone may want to live a very humble, simple life. Somebody may want to be a major tech entrepreneur and have all of these things. And somebody may just inherently want very little.
Yeah.
Is there happiness layers?
I think there's a lot of room for variation. Not complete, not utter. But a great range, you know, just think of the different kinds of work that people enjoy doing, right? But I mean, comparable to some people like a lot of stuff and some people like a lot of simplicity. Some people like to be with other people. You know, if it's their weekend or their time off, they want to be with friends. They want to be out and partying. Some people want time alone, you know, or to take a long walk or to read a book, right? Again, the kinds of work so there's a great range that I think is perfectly legitimate, but I say there's a limit to the range or there are parameters on it because there are only certain things, and this really comes to the heart of Rand's whole moral position. Man has a nature and we have needs and those are not of our personal choosing or taste, right? We have needs for nutrition. You can be a vegetarian, but you're gonna need your protein, you're gonna need certain nutrients and so on, right? So just as there's variation there, we have psychological needs, we have needs to be productive, so you can be productive doing your kind of work, I can do it as a philosophy professor, somebody else could do it as a nurse or what have you, right, make their living. But we're looking for that complete package of what keeps us going well, mm-hmm. serving our well-being physically. emotionally, spiritually, psychologically, you know, in all, you want a lot of that stuff that people talking about meditation talk about. So I don't mean to, you know, I don't mean to diss everybody. Right. I mean, I've been meditating some.
Yeah. Do you find that there's certain pockets of people that are just significantly happier than others? So I would say for example, I'm around a lot of people by the uh-huh. nature of this work
yeah.
that are doing real things that mm-hmm. are, you know, waking up on a mission every
yeah.
day
and, yeah.
and affecting things and having incredible yeah. conversations and talking about uh-huh. ideas, which uh-huh. for me, it's the same
it's
as
fun,
for you.
Yeah.
That's what excites me.
Yeah.
But then I know plenty of other people that just sort of have regular jobs and do regular things. And I'm not saying they're not happy,
uh-huh.
but there's a certain... There's a different layer there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a philosopher. I'm not a physiologist and so on. But I do believe from what I've read that you can be wired a little bit differently in terms of disposition to have a brighter outlook or a gloomier outlook. But again, I do think that, so I don't want to discount that some people are physically made in mm-hmm. way, you know, there are certain, you know, the chemicals and neurons and all of this stuff, and you may inherit certain tendencies to have certain outlooks. But it's not just, again, as I'm talking about it, it's how is your life going? How are you leading your life? So it's not just that you're this passive recipient of how's my life going? It's out of my hands, right? And it's like, what's happening to me and how do I feel about it? Are you leading your life in a way that makes sense such that you are achieving the things that are good for you, that are in your interest, that will bring you well-being. So a lot of it, you know, you can't control everything in life. Mm-hmm. You don't have complete control, but you have a lot of choices. And your choices can make a big difference to how your life goes. So, yeah, I think a lot of people who are excited about their work tend to be pretty happy because they tend to put a lot of energy and effort into their work, and it's work that they've been able to do that they like in the first place, and that's why they're doing it.
As someone that's intimately involved in these ideas and that teaches about these ideas and works with ARI and all that, are you surprised at the amount of people that just don't take their lives seriously, so thus leads to a place of unhappiness?
Now that's another really good and interesting question.
I guess I'm all right at this. See, I'm doing
something
of value.
Basically, yeah.
There you go.
Well, you know, flatter the host. That's always a good strategy. No, but it's true. I mean, it's true. I think that's a good question. I am surprised in a way. But it gets a little subtle here. You know, I think if you said to some people, you don't take your life seriously, they'd be like, what are you talking about? And somewhat offended and off-put and like, of course I take my life. But I mean, to take your life seriously, to take your happiness, your well-being seriously, requires a lot of thought and a lot of not just going along with what everybody else is saying or assuming or thinking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we so often, it's very easy, and I find myself falling into this in certain areas, it's so easy to fall into what we're supposed to think. We've got these notions, you know, and you just get them from everything around you in the culture, from the movies, from the ads, from what you read in the paper or watch on TV or YouTube, right? This is what I'm supposed to think. You know, subconsciously, you don't think those words is what mm-hmm. I'm supposed to think, but you think that way. And you go about leading your life that way. Well, yeah, I should be a lawyer. I mean, I see students sometimes going into careers or law school or whatever it might be. Well, that's the kind of thing you're supposed to do. You're supposed to join the Peace Corps after you graduate. You know, like, you're supposed to give back. You're supposed to... If you really take your happiness seriously, you've got to think long and hard about what's really going to be good for you. Regardless of whether or not that meets the societal expectations or the conventional ideas of what's good and bad. But I think we've often educated people not to be thinking of what will make them happy, rather to be a good team player, to be a good sharer at mm-hmm. school, right? To be thinking about how can they give back and so on. So much of our attention, even on little kids, I think, is directing them away from paying attention to what do you really enjoy?
Mm-hmm.
What's kind of fun for you? You know, what turns you on? Is it this art class? Is it this history thing? Is it, you know, what? But, ooh, they're not supposed to be thinking about themselves. It's what kind of project can they do to volunteer on Saturday and so on.
I know some people are hearing that and going, wait a minute, but wouldn't you want young people to be a good team player because you want a solid team? What would you say to those people?
I'm not against good teams, right? But there's often a kind of elevation of group over individual, you know, group over you, the self, right? Mm-hmm. A group is only as good as the selves who are in it, the individuals who are in it, right? Of course, we all need to and can benefit from cooperating and collaborating in various ways and knowing how to get along, but get along not by subordinating one's own thoughts or one's own interests, but realizing, okay, this would be a good team to be on because I have these values and he has these and they're mutually copacetic in certain ways that we could each go further by pairing up or whatever it might be. But, you know, what I'm worried about is our sort of training people's attention away from thinking about what's going to be good for you because that's selfish. You're not supposed to be looking for, excuse me, you're not supposed to be thinking about what's good for you. You know, who are you? To which, you're a person. You're a person with a life. You're a person with a life that's only going to last a certain amount of time. I'm struck by mortality, right? As if, but I mean, I think it's really important for thinking about a good life. What's a good life for a person to have? How should you lead your life? You have to think about the fact that there's a birth date and there's going to be an end date, you know, and if we're lucky, most of us want it to be long, far out there, but it's going to end and this is all you get. Make the most of it. Like, try to have, doesn't it seem to, isn't this what we all say at funerals, right? Mm-hmm. When we're leaving the funeral, isn't this what we all say? Oh, you got to enjoy it while you have it, or you really have to think about what, yeah, and there's a lot of wisdom in that, and I think it's really important to have that perspective of this is a precious thing. How do you make the most of it? To do that, you've got to get in touch with yourself. What may not please mommy or daddy, whether it be about religion or the career you go into or whatnot, right? But this is what I'm going to find really fulfilling, I think. And you know, you have to be honest with yourself if you find, no, I'm not good at that.
Yeah.
I thought that'd be fun or whatever. You know, or I don't like it as much as I thought, but.
So I like that you mentioned teams. Now I know you're a football gal, I'm a basketball guy, so I'm gonna give a basketball reference here. But
okay.
So my question first, I'll lead it with the question, which is, are there moments where giving up a certain level of individual happiness is good for the collective? And the way I would say this would be something to the effect of, if Michael Jordan in his peak played with only other guys that had the exact same ambition and wanted all the attention and all the scoring and everything else, the team actually would have been worse.
Yeah.
And he ended up playing with people that could give up a little bit of, say, their individual statistics, which probably cost them individual money and a series of other things, in order for them to get the greater goal.
Yeah. No, that's a good example, I think, that kind of thing. When you're playing a team sport,
if you want to give me a football version of that,
No. I mean, I think we can. I don't think I'll embarrass myself on this one. A team sport is a team, right? I mean, it's one thing to play tennis singles, right? It's another to play doubles, or it's another to play basketball or football. Team sports, right? And the goal there is success as a team, right? And that's part of what's understood in playing this team sport. And that's not the same goal as how do I, as the individual center or forward, get the biggest contract?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's understandable that a guy might want a nice contract for next year based largely on his individual stats, but it shouldn't be based primarily, I mean, it's a team sport, right? And owners and coaches of other teams are all gonna realize, yeah, that's great that he's a great player, but the team doesn't do well when he hogs the ball or when he doesn't play his role, given the dynamic, you know, who we have, who's good at what on this team. You have to understand when you're part of a group. So it's not really as, I guess my point is, if you understand the goal here is for the team to succeed, not for me to, you know, for me to get the biggest contract or something, then it's not a sacrifice for me to do it's, no, he should take the shot. He's got the best shot or the best chance of making the shot and so on.
But I suppose you would argue, though, if a certain player said, I actually just want the biggest contract and I don't, and winning or losing or doesn't necessarily matter to me, I just want to go wherever the money is or whatever, you would say, go ahead and do that. Maybe that's not the wisest way to ultimately be happy, but.
Oh, well, yeah, go try to do that, but I don't want you on my team because this is a team sport and that's going to screw up the team, right? And
Where does helping others fit into this? Because this is a consistent theme when I talk to people from ARI that commenters will say to me, well, they're too selfish. Now we just did a show on selfish. Or they're focused too much on their own happiness.
Yeah.
How does helping others and the people around you fit into this equation?
We are for selfishness, for sure, right? Which implies, and this is a true implication, we are against self-sacrifice. Sacrificing for the good of others doesn't make sense. Doing things sometimes to help others can make sense in many circumstances, right? But doing things for people who you value in some way, not for any anonymous stranger. Now, you can value human beings you don't know. I mean, it can make sense, I think, if you value human beings in general and you see these people have been victimized by a tidal wave or some catastrophe, you know, and so on. It can make sense if you can afford it to give some money or whatever, you know, or even to give some time to the well-being of others, but not, hey, I've been saving up for a long time, you know, for I want to start my own business or whatever, and this is the year I'm really getting close, I'm going to plan to do it this summer or whatever. But now there's, you know, some needy person or persons, you should give that up. No, that's definitely, I think, a mistake. The idea that people so often have that, you know, that's the standing obligation. The principle is elevate the good of others above your own. That makes no sense. Now, but think about, I mean, that's just to talk about kind of strangers and so on. There are many times with a friend or maybe certain family member, you know, people who you think well of, not just, oh, family, always you have this obligation to anybody in the family. No, I mean, they're different value, right? I mean, some people are good. Some people you think he's a schmuck, my brother-in-law, or whatever it might be, right?
Yeah.
But there are many cases in which you want to do, you think it's in your interest to do something for somebody else. Not in the sense of, oh, because then he'll do me a favor 2 weeks from now. But it's like, hey, we're in the kind of relationship where your well-being is now enfolded in part of my own.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, when you, the people, and there won't be a lot of these people, but the people with whom you are closest in life, truly closest, and truly value and love the most, their well-being, I mean, you perceive, like if they tell you about, you know, they come home from a day at the office or whatever, the ups and downs, you feel that as if it were your own. I mean, and you own it as if it were your own. So helping that person, you know, the people you value the most, it's like helping yourself. It's not a sacrifice.
Right, so you can help someone and through that be helping yourself without it having to be selfless.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah. And I talk a little bit, I have a book on the selfish virtues of Ayn Rand, and I talk a little bit about the cases in which generosity and charity, you know, words which many people would think, oh my God, hasn't Ayn Rand condemned those, you know, as mortal sin? Not in all cases, you know, but there are certain versions of them. Yeah, and this idea that we owe it to others and we have a mortgage to pay, you know, you come into this world owing. No. That's out.
Well, that's a good segue about how you come into this world to just fit this within a religious perspective for just a second, because you said you grew up Catholic. Obviously, you're not a believer anymore. What about the person that does all of these things, but has
now you mean
some,
the selfish things?
Does all of the selfish things that you would want someone to do, or is on the track of happiness that you think is the right one, et cetera, et cetera, and is applying the ideas of Ayn Rand and rational self-interest in an effective way, that still is a believer at some level. Do you think that's sort of skimming off the top of what it truly is to be a person?
Well, it's gonna hurt. Meaning that is the extent to which you try to juggle incompatible ideas is going to undercut your actually living on the ideas that you profess to believe or most believe, right? Now, I think, you know, with religions, happiness is generally not what they're about, not what they're for. But, you know, what some religions will say is, oh no, we'll give you eternal happiness, eternal salvation, right? But it's this, in a later world, right? You know, come back to me then and you'll get it. It's like, and again, let's come back to, I don't believe in an afterlife, right? This is it. This is the only show we have. This is the life to make as good as it can be, as rich as it can be, as rewarding as it can be. Not at the expense of other people. The rational pursuit of happiness, the selfish pursuit of happiness. And what selfishness is, you know, she's known for speaking of selfishness. We've had a separate conversation about that. It's the pursuit of rational well-being, the kind of well-being we want everybody at that wedding or the new college graduates or the newborn baby, right? You want people to have the best kind of lives they can have. That's what this is about. I'll leave it at that for now.
I think that's a perfect ending right there. That's what this is about. How do you end an interview any better than that?
Thanks for listening to the Ayn Rand Institute Live podcast. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. You can also find us on YouTube. If you like this content, please share or leave us a review. For more information, go to AynRand.org.